I'm very well, thank you. I'm all right. I'm good.
You're not too knackered because you're just finished the South American leg of the tour. America last year. I mean, you're still going.
No. If I'd be knackered if we went straight to South America after after we'd finished America and then went straight into Europe after that with no time off. It's all very well balanced, you know. Luckily, because these are stadium shows mostly or festivals, you've got to they're good weather gigs. So you're talking, you know, if we worked last summer, then we have to work summer somewhere else on the planet. And we were just kind of on the cusp of summer in South America, and we're going to be on, you know, it's going to be summertime when we get to Europe, May through July. But as we all know, if you're a kid that used to watch Wimbledon, see how many times the kids had to pull that cloth over. Centre court, we all know that it doesn't really mean much. I remember once, actually, I saw Radiohead at the RDS about 20 years ago, and it was like June or July, and it was like the coldest day of all time, and it rained. So there's no guarantees, but you know what I mean. It's like, we can't really play outdoor gigs in December. It's a no-no. There's plenty of time in between, and also, you know, when we're not actually on the road, yes, we've all got families that we need to, you know, reintroduce ourselves to so they don't forget who we are. But we also work, you know, for the future. We're either doing things like this or we're recording, you know, new songs or reinventing old ones and stuff like that. So there's always a project on the go.
Quite clearly. I mean, when you're not on stage, even on the tour, you're making videos for the YouTube channel. And it's great to be able to watch you as well as follow your progress on social media. You're just nonstop. And as well, of course, you've got Motley Crue on this leg anyway. Please tell me it's as rock and roll as it sounds backstage.
On stage, yeah, of course. That's the most important thing. I think, you know, you've got to realise that, you know, it is 40-odd years on since the heady days of MTV and Kickstart My Heart and whatever, you know. I'm not saying that they're like angels, but they're certainly scrubbed up a little bit since the day.
Aww.
You know, they've had to part company with Mick Mars because his capabilities of touring these days are pretty difficult with that disease that he has. And they brought in a guy called John Five, who is a phenomenal guitarist who's worked in the past with people like Marilyn Manson, Rob Zombie, and funnily enough, Rod Stewart. But he's a fantastic kid, great, easy to get on with, and he's brought a different dynamic to that band. And I mean, just gone through South America with him on the same plane. We had the Def Crew jet, you know.
It looks unreal.
We had such a laugh, you know, because if anybody fell asleep, God help him. You know, you're talking shaving foam and flour, you know, whatever was at hand was dropped on you and then pictures taken. So, you know, it was very juvenile, but in a kind of a grown up way. It was fun, but they're a tighter band. They sound a lot better on stage than they did last summer. And they're just good fun to hang out with. I mean, I love Nicky. Nicky's my closest connection. I mean, I love them all, but, you know, me and Nicky, we text all the time and always trying to come up with something, not to outdo each other, but to improve what we're doing as a team. And it is, you know, this is the classic example of one and one makes three. It might sound like bad mathematics to a teacher listening, but everybody else will know what I mean, is that it's like when Elton John toured with Billy Joel or Bob Dylan toured with Willie Nelson or we toured with Bryan Adams 20 years ago in baseball stadiums in the States. We like our shows to be events. I think there's nothing wrong with it. I remember seeing U2 with like Simple Minds, the Pretenders and Lou Reed and thinking, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Why not? You know, so it's much better than the posters I used to see as a kid that have the headline band who said, plus special guests. It's like, they get around, these special guests. They seem to be on every tour.
It's very special for a fan to get like a package like that. I mean, obviously you'd pack him in anyway, just you guys. But with Motley and then obviously a Joan Jett in America, that's a mini festival, isn't it? It's cool.
Yeah, that's exactly what we wanted it to be. You know, I mean, Joan's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and she was fourth on the bill.
Wow.
You know, I mean, it's not exactly Woodstock. It's almost like taking Download or one of those kind of festivals on tour. And we've also got Wolfgang Van Halen's Mammoth opening as well.
Awesome.
They're third on the bill. They've just been announced. So it's a very rock bill, you know, which is what we want. And it's just down the road from where I live with the Dublin gig, which is great. We probably end up using my house as a dressing room.
That's brilliant. I was going to ask you that because, like, the next date now when you start this side of the world is Sheffield, and obviously that's home, but is this also home here? Which is home?
Yeah, no, Sheffield is, I refer to Sheffield now as my birth town because I haven't lived there since 1981. So that's what, 42 years? Mm-hmm. I've lived in Ireland twice as long almost as I lived in Sheffield. So I consider myself a child of, you know, global village boy or whatever you want to call me. In Sheffield will always be my birth town. I'll always be grateful for the opportunities that Sheffield gave me, because without being born there, I wouldn't be where I am now. You know, I wouldn't have met the guys. I wouldn't have seen all these amazing gigs when I was growing up through this in the 70s, at anything from the Sheffield City Hall to the Top Rank down to the Limit Club. I saw some amazing bands that made me want to do this. But I it was one of those situations that once we'd stepped outside of Sheffield and started doing gigs everywhere else, it just became less of an important thing for me to go back. And I wanted to see more, and I did. I moved to London for a while. I didn't really like it too much. And then we came to work in Dublin in 1984 and fell in love with the place, and essentially I never left.
That's amazing. It's great to claim you here.
You know, because... I'll tell you another funny little story as well. I just for fun, because I know you can, I did the old cheek swab with myheritage.com or whatever it's called. And I found out that I'm 24% English and I'm 25% Irish.
Yes, you heard it here first.
So go figure. You know, I'm 41% Northern European and 11% Scandinavian and Finnish and all this mad stuff, but I'm actually 1% more Irish than English.
That is something to remember. That is brilliant.
Which is just an odd thing, you know, and I wasn't overly surprised. I was at this weird feeling that I belonged more. There's something about Dublin that just does it for me. In fact, the whole country. I love going down the south, hanging out in the, you know, you stay in a little B&B or whatever. But a capital city with 1 million people as opposed to 20 million or 10 million, it's just got more, it's more me, you know, and the ocean, you've got the sea, you know, I was landlocked in Sheffield. The closest we ever saw to the sea was a puddle, you know, when it rained.
Well, we still have plenty of those, but yeah, we have the actual sea. That, I mean, you've seen every corner of the world, so it's wonderful you still come back to Dublin at the end of the day or the end of the tour.
Oh, yeah. It's my home.
You were talking about reimagining some stuff. Obviously, you've got this unbelievable new record out. I mean, you two, obviously, as you've also mentioned there, have done their reimagining of late, and they've kind of stripped everything back. You, who knew it was possible, have added more onto Def Leppard tracks and even made it bigger, orchestral.
Yeah. I have yet to hear the... I was hanging out with Adam, actually, a couple of months ago. He was telling me about the record, and I said, that's a coincidence. We've kind of done a similar thing, but different. Obviously, their album's been in the works for a while, so has ours, but we wouldn't have known about each other.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a spy in either camp. But, we were... This was brought to the table to us about 5 years ago. And we just kind of went, yeah, okay, maybe one day that'll be something cool to do. It was never really on my bucket list to do this. But once it was presented to us, I went, you know what? This could actually be really cool, as long as it's not just the greatest hits with strings stuck on the top, like, you know, icing on a cake, you know, just plonked on. I said, we've got to really go to town on this and make it like a proper job, you know. So when once the all the kind of grown-ups brought everything to the table, and we said, well, we'll only do it with a certain string arranger that we've used in the past, because he's not a guy that does classical and he does rock and roll because he's classical. This guy is a rocker that learned to be a string arranger, so he comes at it from our point of view. And we wanted it to be, you know, we wanted it to be bombastic and memorable, the way that the string arrangement Mick Ronson did on Life on Mars for David Bowie, for example, stuff like that, where the strings become as much a part of the song as the actual song itself. So we don't have an ego in the sense of, like, we've got guitar players that went, well, oh, you can't take my guitars off. Phil and Vivian would be, Phil, because a lot of the songs were recorded with Steve, but this Phil would be the first to go, no, just take the guitars off, because then the strings can shine through. So a lot of it is just orchestration and singing with guitars where we need them for the dynamics, you know. And we didn't just do the greatest hits. In fact, some of them didn't sound right at all. There were certain songs that it's like you put strings on and you're going, oh my God, this is awful. So we had to really rework it, you know. So like the version of Sugar, when you hear it, it's unrecognizable as the same song that is on Hysteria. And that's what we had to do, you know. And we picked all the songs that we've written in the past that are a lot more symphonic than just your standard hit. So there's kind of deep tracks like Paper Sun from Euphoria, Turn to Dust off the Slang album, because they were kind of orchestrated by guitars in the first place. Mm. So to orchestrate them with an orchestra became like, you know, a no-brainer really. And so we reimagined 16 songs, and we went into Abbey Road Studios a year ago to record the strings. And just being in that room, you know, because it is Abbey Road, and watching from the balcony as these guys are doing their thing to our songs was absolutely incredible.
Wow.
It felt so special because it was familiar to us, but these guys were coming in and just reading it the way that you'd read the news. As long as you can read and you've got the words in front of you, you'll make it sound like you know what you're talking about. These guys had never heard our music before, but because it was so brilliantly scored by Eric Gorfang, our string guy, and so brilliantly directed by the conductor, these guys just came in and just banged it out. And it was like, you know, 3-4 passes at each song. And we'd be watching it, trying to guess which song they're playing, because they're all on headphones. We're 40 yards away on the balcony, and we're going, oh, I know what it is. And it was amazing to watch.
It sounds emotional.
Really, really was. There's going to be a great documentary out of this.
Oh, that's goosebumpy now, what you're talking about there with the Abbey Road and everything. That will be amazing. Drastic Symphonies, May 19th is the release of the album. You're talking about you two reimagining, you're reimagining. But look, let's not forget, we've to celebrate the 40-year-old birthday of Pyromania. Can you believe it's been 4 decades?
Yeah, and there's in the works, there is a 40th anniversary celebration album coming out. It has been released before with bonus material, but this time we didn't want to just say, oh, well, you know, just put that one out again and stick a 40 on it. It's a bit of a rip-off to do that. So we've really dug deep for some stuff that's never been heard, which I'm not going to say right now, because let's be honest, we're still actively promoting Diamond Star Halo.
Sure.
Then we've got Drastic Symphonies in May, and then towards the end of the year, we'll have the Pyromania thing. So let's drip feed you the info and say, coming soon, something quite special.
What a treat if you're a Def Leppard fan. And your fans are all ages, aren't they? I mean, like, you're getting discovered all the time by the young folk. You know, when you went digital, when you went on stream in 5 years ago, all your stuff started hitting top of streaming charts because people are rediscovering you. And now when you look out at the crowd of the likes of Marley Park this summer, are you seeing just generations?
Absolutely. You don't really get to see the guys that have been with us since day one on the barrier anymore. They tend to want to sit
down the back, are they? You know,
picnic blanket or whatever. You know, and you know, I said all along, this is something that I've wished for all my career and hoped one day I would see come to fruition. I saw the Stones in Toronto in 89, and I was as a guest of Ronnie Wood, name dropper, and I was on the mixing desk just looking around at the crowd as much as watching the band. And I saw three generations, like a kind of a 60-year-old granddad and a 40-year-old father and an 18-year-old son, grandson, you know, all stood side by side singing, you know, Start Me Up or Jumping Jack Flash or whatever it was, and thinking, oh, I hope that happens to us one day. Because I think when you become, which let's use the polite phrase for this, when you become a legacy act like us, anybody from our generation, which is, you know, us, you two, Duran Duran, Iron Maiden, Depeche Mode, name your poison, you know. When you become a legacy act, AC/DC, that's still around and they're still going to tour, even Guns N' Roses, that have been around as long as we have, you if you're going to be in stadiums, you're going to play in front of people, you have to be bringing new folk in. And you're absolutely right. You know, we were the longest holdouts on God's earth for the digital stuff, only because we weren't happy with the deal. But once we got the deal done and we went digital, we now get fed all this information. So everybody can often think that I'm just this, like, churning out numbers guy. But it's only because you can just make a call to your manager and go, how many did we stream in Bolivia this week?
Unreal.
And they'll tell you the where they live. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
We've streamed 7 billion times since we went digital in 2018. Those numbers are just off the charts for a legacy band. It's crazy.
It's nuts.
And so it also tells you where you're popular, and it tells you where you can tour. I mean, it just makes life so much easier these days to do that. But it is phenomenal to think that we're bringing in younger people. There's two ways of looking at this. I'm happy for us that it's working, but it does make you wonder where the new bands are coming through. Who are we going to be talking about like us in the year 2070?
I think we'll still be talking about you, Joe, to be honest with you. Sometimes.
You know, it's a bit sad that there isn't the infrastructure these days for the sharing. Because, you know, when we were coming through, and, you know, we would rush to the hotel on a 1983 tour to see a new video by ZZ Top because of the cars or the Fergie guitars, or even his Michael Jackson video to see if he's outdone his last one. All that's gone. That doesn't exist. So all it is now is a lot of people with headphones on listening in their bedrooms without their friends there. You know, I mean, it was a gathering for us. And I think it's one of the reasons that live has become such a big thing these days is that human beings sooner or later just have to rub shoulders with other human beings. The streaming thing is wonderful, but the touring is even better.
Well, as an audience member, it's the same. Like you say, rubbing shoulders, sweating on each other, looking around, the camaraderie, mouthing the words and shouting and roaring. And that's why gigs are so important for us, the fans, as well. You mentioned,
yeah,
actually,
I couldn't agree more. And it's more obvious now since the pandemic's, well, hopefully over.
Hugely.
We couldn't do it at all. And, you know, and then there was everybody's little worried. I don't really want to rub shoulders with other people in case I catch something. But that will just settle down, you know, because sooner or later we all have to build up our immune systems again.
Well, it's funny. You don't want to do it in Tesco, but you do it in a gig. No bother.
Absolutely. You know, there's got to be a good reason for it. Tesco, not necessarily the reason. Marley Park or any venue is absolutely a good reason.
You mentioned, sorry, before I let you go, you mentioned Maiden, Depeche Mode, Duran Duran there as those legacy bands, all of which are playing Dublin this year. Are you going to go see any of those guys?
I saw Duran Duran in St. Anne's Park, I think it was.
Last year, yeah.
Like May. Yeah, I was there with Adam Clayton, and I got incredibly drunk, sadly, and but I still remember the gig. It was actually freezing cold, as it sometimes is in Dublin. I mean, we've known Duran Duran since we met them at the Lexington Queen in Tokyo when we were both over there doing promo, and because, you know, musically we're miles apart, but we were just British people hanging out in Japan, and we got on like house on fire. And so when I saw them the other week, and I saw John Taylor in Los Angeles at a Roxy Music gig about 5 months ago as well. So they're just people that we keep banging into. If I'm not working, I go see anyone because I just love music. It doesn't matter whether it was, I saw the Psychedelic Furs for the first time in my life when they played the Academy about 5-6 years ago.
Oh, what a great venue.
And they've always been one of my favourite bands. I love them. And I'd never got to see them, and I finally did. So, you know, little clubs, I saw the Skids and Big Country play together there as well about a week later. And then, you know, I see Duran Duran in a festival place, or I saw the Black Star Riders there. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter who it is. Miles Davis nailed it when he said there's only two kinds of music, good and bad. And I'd certainly go and see Maiden because Steve Harris is a good mate of mine. So if I'm there when they're there, I'll be annoying him.
I'll be looking at you. And you're obviously not taking notes or saying, "Oh, I wouldn't have done that now. I wouldn't held the mic that way," or anything. You're just enjoying it.
Oh, no, those days are long gone. I don't believe in competition. If somebody holds the mic wrong, it's probably the right way to hold it. Who knows if I'm holding it? You know what I mean? It's like everybody's got their thing. You know, I remember the first time I saw Axl Rose's bizarre mic stand, but it took, you know what I mean? People kind of, you do a cartoon of Axel and you'll have that weird mic stand. Freddie Mercury with just the top half.
Yeah, trademark.
These things stand out, you know, they become your trademark moves.
So aside from wrapping up for the weather on July 4th for the cold, potentially at Marley Park, we can expect, obviously, to get rocked by you guys. You're not bringing the orchestra, I presume. It's just the hits and the other stuff.
That's a separate project. You know, the album will be out. No, it is something that we've obviously discussed at some point. We'd like to do some shows to show off that record in a live environment. But, you know, with an orchestra, not the easiest thing to tour with. So we may end up doing a residency somewhere one day. But we've got these shows with Motley that are going to run into for the rest of this year. And we've also got shows next year with other people. So it's work in progress is the best I can tell you. But, you know, for Marley Park, we're there to plug in the electrics and give it some, you know. And you know, we are also that band that aren't stupid. We're not going to not play the hits.
Yeah.
We want people are going to be there to hear certain songs. And when I go see McCartney or I go and see the Stones, I want Let It Be and I want Helter Skelter and I want Jumpin' Jack Flash and Start Me Up. Yeah, play two or three new songs as well, but don't kill me with them. And that's always been our method, is like spread them out. Don't overindulge, because people will go to the beer tent. You got to keep their attention. And open mic nights in 200-seater bar downtown is that's the place to play 12 new songs. You don't do it at Marley Park, you know. So we're there to put on a show that's going to be the history of the band, old, new, and current. You know, I mean, it's simple as that. And maybe even futuristic, who knows?
That's brilliant. And of course, the after party is at yours, but invites only.
Yeah, probably. But with three kids, it'll be very quiet, you know, because they'll all be asleep.
I can identify with that, Joe. Listen, thank you so much. I could talk to you all day. Give our love to Rick as well. Obviously, we were all shocked as anyone to hear about what happened to him a few weeks ago. But we cannot wait to see you. Marley Park, July 4th. We will get rocked. Thanks so much.
Indeed, you will. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Thanks, bye-bye. Steve. Good one.